go.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
And here we are. We are now 2 days into the month of August. It is the second day of August 2019, Friday on the front porch at the Horn, one of my favorite broadcast days of the week. Every program at the Horn begins with gratitude, and so thanks are due this evening to our dear friend of long standing, Reggie, and to Rocco, and to Elizabeth, and David. Thank you very kindly. Those are our subscribers for the second day of the month over at PayPal. Let's see. Yep. Right on time. Program note advisory to begin the program. I heard thunder, so there's every possibility in the world that at some point in time, between now and the end of the program, now and 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, Frontier will fail. Yes. Yes. What? Give me a moment, please. Never a dull damn moment. I'll be right back. Stand by. Okay, sorry. I guess the neighbors are running their two-cycle motorcycles or something, because and it sounded like they were running it right outside the studio window. It was a bizarre noise, to say the very least. Never a dull moment. But thanks to our subscribers, and Shirley's Challenge, Bruce's Memorial Challenge, from yesterday has been carried over. We met half of it, and hopefully we'll meet the other half and qualify for the whole shebang today. So that means, as far as fundraising goes, the fundraising is at $300. The ordinary $200 for today, $100 to finish off last night and the challenge. So if you want to help out, just run over to headon.live and click on contribute, and we'll keep this boat afloat for another month. Program note, reminder, no program Monday, no Moran Monday. I've got family coming in, and we will be gathering together, and shrimp will be brought up from the Gulf of Mexico, and there will be a big boiled shrimp feast, and I'll make some stuff, and we'll have a grand old time of it. I don't know. I mean, this is going to be kind of a bummer. I talk about things on this program that I think have some bearing on our day-to-day existence, our day-to-day lives. Unlike a lot of people who do this kind of stuff, I will from time to time talk about our lives here, because this is very much, we lead a different life from a lot of people who do this kind of work. Everybody faces their own problems. Everybody faces their own challenges and horrors. And you know, this is no different. So, and it's not easy to talk about, but it's been a brutal 18 hours or so. And, you know, I've talked on a number of occasions about the fact that I don't have health care because of the way the bureaucracy works out. Can't qualify for the exchanges and can't qualify for Medicaid. Well, that affects not only me, but others in my family, directly and indirectly. Before I go any further, I do want to thank an anonymous contributor out there who made it possible for me to run over and get a new set of cans for the studio tomorrow, which I will do, because this thing is like, well, I've been using them for a long time, and they're so blown up and blown out that it's like listening to audio on the cracked speaker of a 72 Ford Pinto. So thank you very kindly for that, and thank you to Charlene for getting us started. Half of the challenge is knocked out now, so we've only got $50 more to finish the challenge for Bruce's memorial challenge. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Charlene. Well, part of not having adequate access to health care, well, yeah, I don't know why we talk about health care in terms of, I don't know why we bifurcate it or separate it out. Mental health care is every bit as important and every bit a part of one's being as, say, taking a statin to ward off heart disease or insulin for diabetes. And so what I'm getting, well, we had a family disaster last night. I don't talk about it here. Maybe it's better if I do. But there is a member of our family who deals with profound issues of mental illness. And we have struggled for years to get appropriate care for that. But this is, you know, this is just another day in the life of God knows countless millions of Americans. And you don't walk around saying, why me? Because if you say, why me, you're asking the universe, why not someone else instead of? And that's just shitty. But we're in the midst of a family disaster. Without my permission, and without the permission of his mother, my son took the car last night and totaled it. So this little family is, in essence, screwed. Found out about it about 12:45 last night. I got when the program closes here, And I'm not talking about this as an, oh, woe is me, poor me. I'm talking about this because if I talk about it, then maybe other people are more willing to talk about it and not hide behind shame or fear or revulsion, stigma. My son is brilliant in some ways. He's gifted. He can play just about anything, any musical instrument that he can sort it out and play it. But in other ways, he is badly mentally ill. I wish I could tell you what the formal diagnosis is, but I can't because we can't even get sufficient coverage to get that far. You know, he was seen by our GP and, you know, just trying to find something to stabilize him. And, well, it only works if you take it correctly, and I have no way of knowing if he takes it correctly. And so, like I said, I mean, you've heard me on this program. I had to take Ferg here. I had to take Ferg there. God knows he's tried to get out and make a way for himself. Sparky remembers when he was out in Northern California trying to work on a livestock ranch. And he's gone hither and thither trying to find work for himself. After the hurricanes, he went down to Florida. What would that be, about 9 months ago, to work on hurricane relief, and the disaster and devastation he saw absolutely crushed him. And so he's tried to go up and work. You know, hillbillies, there's not much work around here. And so he's tried to go, and he was getting ready to go again. In fact, you can make an argument that he scarcely even lives here. He pops in for a couple of weeks, and then he's gone again, trying to find something, anything. Of course, his judgment is badly impaired. And I guess he expected last night that his mother and I would be furious with him, but he doesn't understand what it is to have children. Because we got him home, and all we could say over and over again was, you're home, you're safe, you're still alive. Because that's what matters. And this is a scenario that plays out family after family after family after family in this country, because we really haven't given a righteous good fuck about fixing not a broken healthcare system, but one that is shattered into a million tiny pieces. And wrecks families like mine virtually every day of the week. I don't know what's going to happen next. The first thing I did when I woke up after getting about 3 hours of sleep last night, and Ferg just practically in a state of what I would guess, if I were a mental health expert, was a psychotic break. He didn't even know where he wrecked the car. The first thing I did this morning was call Enterprise and got them to bring me a rental so that I could do the running and doing necessary to to find out what the lay of the land was, what the facts on the ground were. Got a nice handful of tickets to deal with. Failure to maintain control, reckless driving, things like that. In the grand scheme of things, those don't matter as much, if at all, compared with the idea of still having a child who's alive. But it's a, it's a matter of how close to the precipice so many families in this country live. I don't know. I don't know what the future. I don't know what the future holds. This is rural America. This is 12-mile round trip just to the Wiggling Pig. This is 4 miles round trip up a hill and down a mountain to the dollar store. Or the convenience store. This is, you know, having to go out and buy water and bring it in every couple of days. And this is replicated all over this country. Millions of times every day. Families shatter and fall apart when the only car dies and nobody can get to work anymore. I am more fortunate than most insofar as what I do is here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. I spend a lot of my time, as does Agnes, worrying about what would become of him if we weren't there to support him. And he gets the lion's share of attention and support. All our kids are adults now, but if you've got a mother and or a father, you know that you will always feel like, you know, you're always their kids. And I know it's got to just drive his sisters to distraction. The degree of time that we put into trying to keep him stable. Because he's not. I don't know how he's ever going to be able to work a job and stick to it. He hasn't so far, and he's tried everything. And sooner or later, it all falls apart. He doesn't have enough of a... Well, it's neither here nor there. But I figured I would just lay this out on the front end because the news that we talk about on this program, current events, they aren't some sort of remote and distant thing. They butt right up against our very beings, whether we realize it or not. the tow bill today. The tow bill. You know, I've talked about how sure-footed that car is. I don't know how you lose control of it. And not just drive it into a ditch, but dive it into a ditch. The tow bill alone was $500. You've seen those stories out there about how, and it gets mentioned in the pageants, by the way. I think it has been. About how the average American family can't handle a $400 disaster. Well, there it was this morning. And some poor guy had to go out at 1 o'clock in the morning with a tow truck. Of course, he damned well deserves to be paid probably twice as much as whatever it is he's making. And so they say it, and you pay it. Because it has to be done. I figured I could either come on here and talk about the last 24 hours, or I could just put up a, sorry folks, my apologies, no program this evening. I ain't into it. But that's the thing. I am into it. When you live in chaos, 3 hours that feel like normal are absolutely precious. And that's what these 3 hours are for me. And I hope for you, too. We built a little community here, and we get together for 3 hours on every evening, Monday through Friday, except this Monday. Remember, program note, no program. And we put differences aside, and we put the things that are just eating our own livers aside, and we revel in the community we have created together. And I don't know about you. I do know. I get a lot. There are a lot of people that write to me. Some I share, some I don't. And say the three hours we have with this program help keep me sane. Well, the same right back at you. So I'll try to, I'll get on my best behavior. I'll try to do my best. And there's plenty to talk about this evening. And we'll get Friday on the Front Porch started here in a little bit. The Skype link is posted over at headon.live if you'd like to join in the conversation around the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable in the old holler tree that we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Well, go to headon.live, click on that Skype link, and it'll take you right into the group. And we'll talk about, as usual, whatever's on folks' minds this particular evening. Thank you to Lady B for jumping in and taking things down a notch. There's $40 to go on the challenge. Thank you, Lady B. You do a ton. And as so many others have said, Lady B writes angelically. Don't you fall, she says. Let us help you. Don't fall or he'll fall too. You stand straight and tall. He'll stay above the water because he rests on your shoulders. Let us help you. You will not fall. God, thank you, Lady B. Thank you. And that's what I've been trying to do for about the last, because, you know, I got off the air and I went outside and my car wasn't there. And I looked at Agnes and said, "Where's the car?" She said, "The car's not there." I said, "No." She said, "I don't know." And, you know, then we both noticed, well, he's not here. And we looked at each other with that, oh, no feeling. And then about 12:30, the news came. And I can't tell you how profoundly relieved we were when the news came and the first thing that was out of the mouths was, "He's okay. He's going to be a little stoved up. He's going to be a little stiff. He's going to be a little sore. But he's okay." And they said, "But your car? Not so much." "What happened?" "Drove it into a swamp." Because, you know, ordinary things don't happen here. "Drove it into a swamp." I mean, suddenly I felt like I was in a Monty Python, that was in part of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. "Well, you know, I built a castle. They said it was daft to build a castle in a swamp, but I built it anyway and it burned down. Sank into the swamp. Fourth one I built, burned down, fell over, and then sank into the swamp." Into the swamp. Wow. Just wow. I had a note to begin the program from Lady B. "Under the crack, rocks, and stones, there is water underground." And I saw that subject line, and I immediately thought, "Ha! That sounds familiar." And then in my old DJ brain, it's like a fader came up, and I heard the music that ran along. So, "Oh, yeah, I know that." Lady B writes, 130 people died of drug overdoses Thursday. That stat isn't particularly unusual. What made it notable is that one of those people was the granddaughter of Ethel and Bobby Kennedy. She was 22 years old. I read that story. Jesus. See, Ferg's 23. The other 130 varied in ages, races, and size, and were just as meaningful and important to their families as she was to hers. Some were mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, lovers and muggers. All of them were someone's child. Water dissolving and water removing. There's water at the bottom of the ocean. Under the water, carry the water, remove the water. At the bottom of the ocean. Talking Heads. See? Some of us float through life like leaves on a river. Aimlessly, our spiritual purpose largely unfulfilled, we let the water carry us where it may. Hopefully it takes us back to the ocean. More often than not, some of us end up clogging a storm drain. What is a human being's purpose in life if they can't feel peace and happiness during their lives? Lady B had no idea at the time she was writing this that those are the kinds of questions that are swirling in our little home here. The National Institute of Drug Abuse says in 2017, 70,000 people died of an opioid-related overdose. That's the population of some small towns. And we just gave the makers of many of those opiates a goddamn tax cut. My oldest brother died of a drug-related heart attack. It was shocking, but not surprising. His psychotic girlfriend found him at the bottom of her sister's house's stairs. He was 58. My brother had been doing drugs since the early 70s. That's kind of what you did back then. He was 15 years older than me. And by the time I was old enough to connect meanings to things, he was living on his own. He did a brief stint in the Army, just lucky enough to miss Vietnam, but not the VA benefits. Back then, he mostly smoked pot and dabbled with psychedelics. By the 90s, he was a crack addict. Funny, smart, and charming. He was a ladies' man and always ready to party, but he could also be pretty disciplined. He worked crappy jobs mostly to avoid piss tests. He married, had a kid, divorced, had an affair, divorced her too. The third woman turned him on to her prescription opioids, and away they went. One night, while delivering pizzas, he was robbed. The guy took his money and shot him in the leg. He was okay, but he needed a few pills to help him ease the pain. That was when the floodgates opened. The VA threw pills at him like a SeaWorld trainer throws fish at seals. My brother popped pills like Howard Hughes washed his hands. It gave him a purpose. The most onerous shit, though, was the fentanyl patches. If you get enough patches, you can squeeze the liquid out of them in a certain way, and then you can add it to whatever you're smoking. Since he would smoke anything, including cigarettes, what more could you ask for? Editorially, I'll note, in the other small county where we once lived, and this was at the front end of the opioid epidemic, about the same, within the same time frame as Lady B's talking about, I knew of people who chewed fentanyl patches like gum. Kid you not. Lady B continues, he died 3 months to the day after my mother. He didn't manage to show up for Mom's funeral. However, he did show up a week later when we sprinkled some of her ashes in a memorial garden. He and his psycho girlfriend nodded off throughout the whole ceremony. We can argue forever over whether or not marijuana is a gateway drug. For some folks, maybe. But if you go harder than that, it is usually because you had a problem to begin with. I would think that waking up to your mother's screams after your infant younger brother had died in bed beside her would be a start. Add that to his father having diddled his young sons and motivated them to diddle, if not downright fuck their younger half-sisters, and you're aiming for the gold in the Fuck My Life Olympics. You're Usain Bolt. You're Greg Louganis after the head injury. Still a good swimmer. Not quite right in the head. Oh, and 30 years later, your youngest brother, your co-pilot pedophile conspirator, up and dies on you too. He was 31. You're the only son left, and you're a drug addict fuck-up. Drug-addled fuck-up. My mom never said it should have been him. But she knew. He knew it too. Drug addiction is not just a problem for losers. It's not just for the poor, the ugly, the stupid, or the deranged. It could start at the end of dental surgery, or just from a doctor trying to calm you down after the death of your dog. But it happens. It's never really been clean, easy, or even an immediately identifiable thing. But then again, I only saw what was visible. At least he was good enough to hide the hardcore stuff. I loved my brothers. As Mom said, faulty or not, they were my brothers. But I only cared for the good parts, the stuff you did in the light, like listening to great music together, or the cookouts. The rest can remain in the dark. But like Michael Mullet Bolton once sang, nothing heals a broken heart like time, love, and tenderness. So when you think your world is over, baby, just remember that. I smoke weed, but I can't stand opiates, not even for pain. I'm not taking that chance. I'm worthy of a shot at peace, and I'm accepting that. I'm fucking 50 years old. I deserve a chance to swim in calm waters, make strides, move forward. I deserve to see the ocean, not the storm drain. I deserve to live in the light. And those are some words from Lady B to get us started into the evening. To ponder what it is, and well, it's easy to trot out people like Plato and the idea that the unexamined life is not worth living. with the things I read from Lady B and the time that I know I spend sitting around wondering how did I get here? Let's stay with the Talking Heads theme. We must be living lives of the gold standard for all the examination that they've gotten. And so hopefully, as we go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable here shortly, we'll bear that sort of thing in mind. And I'll keep you posted on the ongoing rolling disaster here. I mean, it's not like we don't have a roof over our heads. This rickety old 80-plus-year-old house is still standing. And so far as I can tell, it's keeping the rain out. Again, another program reminder. I heard more thunder a few minutes ago. If the program disappears, you'll know that Frontier has, little Cletus down in Georgia in a thunderstorm, run under the bed and hidden. Who knew that an internet service provider, at the first sound of thunder, would actually be capable of running under the bed and hiding? It happens. As usual, the kudos begin rolling in for Lady B. Darlene in Connecticut says, "Wow, wow, Lady B." And that's, you know, I think where the wow comes from is from the honesty and the honesty coupled with the skill at delivering that honesty. Because when I first read that, that was the first word out of my mouth, too. Wow. And when you see great writing like that, you immediately think about things that you would compare it to. For instance, Chris Saliza at the Washington Post. You know, if he drives his car into a swamp, wait a minute, he's in Washington, D.C. He drives around in one all the time. No, he's never going to worry about it. Just pick up the phone, make the call, no big deal. But he wrote a piece critiquing Kamala Harris, and declaring from his vast storehouse of white male privilege that, you know, she's got a problem. And that Tulsi Gabbard she's got Tulsi Gabbard, you know, really took her out to the woodshed. And while there's a problem there, and we talked about it, the prison slave labor problem. It's not because of a personality flaw in Kamala Harris. It has to do with how she viewed people in prison. There was too much glee by half in what Chris Saliza wrote. I won't encourage you to go and read it because it's dreck. But when I see typing like that, and I compare it with the reality spoken here approach that Lady B and so many others of you share with me, I know where my preferences lie. Things like what Terrace wrote the other night about the way that the tech industry sneers at rural California. By the way, rural California, that story popped into the consciousness today again. From the Department of Jesus Jumping Christ, I can't believe that. But, of course, naturally you can. The police union in San Jose, California, which is not that far from Gilroy, turns out that the police union was having a fundraiser. And for all that I tend to think that California is a different universe from West Virginia, I guess it's not really. Because around here, if you want to have a fundraiser, you do a raffle, and you go to Walmart and see if they'll donate you a shotgun. Because everybody will spend $1 on a raffle ticket for the chance at a free shotgun. Or maybe a deer rifle, a Remington 30-06, something like that. Because like I said, around here, firearms are more liquid than gold. And so, according to the San Jose Mercury News today, a police union fundraising raffle featuring a semi-automatic rifle as the prize was canceled today, a day after San Jose's former police auditor called it out as being in particularly poor taste in the wake of the Gilroy Garlic Festival shooting that killed 3 people and wounded 13 more. Ladoris Cordell, who headed the city's office of the independent police auditor from 2010 to 2015, said she was shocked by an ad in the latest issue of Vanguard, the monthly magazine of the San Jose Police Officers Association. That must be one big-ass police department to have their own magazine every month. It promoted an August raffle to support the SJPD chaplaincy, with a $20 ticket making the buyer eligible to win a Ruger PC carbine 9mm semi-automatic rifle. Wow. That's insult added to injury. It's not just that the cop union was raffling off a semi-automatic firearm. Son of a gun, they were doing it to benefit their in-house preachers. You know, put Christian types in the main, probably. You know, put up thy sword into his place, for those that live by the sword do die by the sword. Bible stuff, red letter Bible stuff. Ladoris Cordell said, "I don't understand the mentality of law enforcement officers who think this is okay. They're supposed to protect and serve. You can't protect and serve the community by putting a rifle out into the community." Meanwhile, in terms of marketing, because there's always marketing, if you check with Ruger, you'll find out that Ruger pitches this particular semi-automatic rifle as being really cool, because you can break it down into teeny tiny pieces and easily transport it in a backpack or an over-the-shoulder bag. You know, when your hands are busy with the bolt cutters because you're cutting the goddamn fence open so you can sneak in and shoot up the Gilroy Garlic Festival. No, that wasn't the same kind of gun, but still, the point is there. Over at Ruger, they say, "Easy takedown enables quick separation of the barrel fore-end assembly from the action for ease of transportation and storage." Well, at least they called it off. The president of the cop union, one Sergeant Paul Kelly, said, "We understand the concern this raffle has caused to some, and as such, we will discontinue support for any raffle of any weapon in the future. Our prayers continue to be thoughts and prayers. Our prayers continue to be with the victims of the recent tragedy in Gilroy, and we sincerely apologize for any pain this may have caused them." Hint to Sergeant Paul Kelly, end your sentence after, put the period after apologize. We sincerely apologize, period. Leave out the for any pain this may have caused them. It's not their fault if they had pain. We apologize. Using 2020 hindsight, the chief of police said canceling the raffle. Yeah, that was the right thing to do. And, you know, look, I'm sure the raffle was probably already scheduled before the shooting at the Garlic Festival. Goddamn Garlic Festival. Ruining a perfectly good semi-automatic rifle raffle for all the lawful gun owners. You know, just like the 19-year-old who shot up the Gilroy Garlic Festival was a lawful gun owner. You reckon the San Jose Police Department would have felt any qualms or any grief or any sorrow if the rifle that they raffled had wound up being part of a mass shooting somewhere in California? Oopsie.
Well, you know, you can't ever predict what a person's going to do with a gun.
Which is precisely why, no, never mind. Going back to what I was talking about a little bit ago, Kyle says, I for the longest time struggled with symptoms of many mental health, I call them struggles, but could never fully get the help I needed or a diagnosis until having an incident in public when I was 21 or 22, and I had to apply and be accepted for disability insurance. I have various issues whose symptoms manifest as mental health issues that were finally diagnosed after being able to see specialists. Thanks to getting government-sponsored health care. It's embarrassing and pathetic and immoral that we live in a country where it's the case not everyone can have the health care that allows them to have this. Medicare for all, fucking now, damn it. Single-payer fucking yesterday. All the best to you and your family as you deal with it. I know it's not easy, and I know the toll that my struggles took on my family. Thank you for sharing and for all that you do. Thank you for sharing, Kyle. Thank you. Dave from the blind said, I'm just glad to hear nobody was hurt physically. Stay strong, like Lady B said. Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Jimmy says, besides the family you have there, just remember you have your Horn family out here. Believe me. Believe me, I know. Jim says, dreadfully sorry, Bob. Admiration and respect for Lady B. Thank you, Jim. Ron in Raleigh says, sorry to hear about the loss of your vehicle, but good to hear that Ferg survived with his health intact. My sister in her younger life was prone to violent mood swings. She was treated with lithium, which helped. Cannabis helped. As a kid, my mother had problems at that time. Any mention of mental health problems was taboo. Black folks in the 50s didn't really have access to mental health professional care. The health insurance industry decides what will cost them the most and removes those things from what they will cover. I wonder if the moderates think people love their employer-provided plans that don't cover mental health and dental and vision. Yeah, see, the idea of not covering dental and vision, and let alone mental health, always struck me as extremely short-sighted. I recall the case, and I recall it because of the way that, who was that? I think it was that really, really, you know, in the time before Tommy Lauren, there was that one right-wing harridan, Michelle something, maybe? I think she was... a recent arrival, or born here to immigrant parents, maybe Filipino. And no, I'm thinking about a separate case, but no, the kid who had a bum tooth and couldn't get treatment for it. And it wound up infecting his heart. And then they did try to treat it to the tune of over $300,000, if I recall correctly, earlier in this century. And the kid died when all they would have had to have done would be to have taken care of his tooth on the front end. Pennywise and pound foolish is a thing. Note coming from Steve in New York. Subject line, Lady B. My first reaction was to think how speechless that made me. However, the more I thought about it, the more I realized the feeling I was experiencing was akin to a breathtaking silence and a deafening explosion all at once. The feeling was like being in space and screaming. My scream met with the silence of space outwardly. It met with a sustained, deafening screech inside my brain. That is damned well a good expression of what it felt like. Steve adds, by the way, the firearm was clearly the first choice of Jesus Herman Christ himself. You say something profound like that, and then you drop one of those on me. See, that's what you all did. Yeah. And there it is. Yeah, link. 5-year-old dies from toothache. Yeah, it was kind of a follow-up. 5 years after boy dies from toothache, Maryland Medicaid dental care is on the mend. Thank you, Ralphs. Huge hugs to you, Ferg, and everyone in your family. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so much. Scary stuff when this happens. It's terrifying. And I don't know, you know, I don't know. I won't dare speak for Agnes. But I think she's had just waves of fear and relief and fear and relief and terror and relief and fear and just rolling over her like the tide coming in waves. I know I have. And part of the reason that I bring it up is because for some reason or another because I guess the multimillionaires in the for-profit media like it this way, an inordinate amount of time has been given to Marianne Williamson in the wake of the pageants this week. And things she has said in the past about psychiatric medication and the things that she then said trying to backtrack on it. Remember, she's another one of those Lulus for whom apparently Oprah has an affinity for making famous. Dr. Oz, Dr. Phil, Marianne Williamson. At one point, Marianne Williamson was out there quoting Scientology publications about how awful psychiatric medications are. And Anderson Cooper took her to task the other night. And she didn't like it one little bitty bit. But every time one of these new age self-help numbskulls gets out there and starts braying about how you can spin your crystal in just the right way and you won't have those sads anymore. Well, I wonder how many people die in the aftermath. I wonder how many women have had hysterectomies or dealt with with ovarian cancer after Lulu's like Gwyneth Paltrow went around hustling their jade cooch egg.
Oh yeah, just stick a rock up there, and it'll absorb all the sad cells, and it's only $109.95, and it's high grade polished jade, and it's shaped like an egg, and well, you know, you got eggs up there, so cram it right on in, and you'll be bitter before you know it.
Yeah. Yep, that's exactly who I was thinking of, Suman. Thank you. Suman says, I believe you are thinking of Michelle Malkin. Her last name used to be Maglalang. Yeah, that's exactly who I was. But the for-profit media just ate it up when Anderson Cooper and she squared off. And I guess it made for some good TV. Made for some nice wrestling. But you know what? It didn't do any goddamn good at all for people who struggle with mental illness. And through that interview, which I watched, she used this buzz phrase, natural human despair.
We have to learn to deal with our natural human despair. Despair is not bad. It teaches us about our humanity.
Oh, shut up. We're not talking about natural human despair. We're talking about the human mind being overwhelmed and unable to cope with whatever it is that passes for modern life, society, and culture. That's where we are. That's where we are. Yeah, thank you. Sparky remembered, too, Michelle Malkin. And then she went on and attacked and slimed a little kid who, I think, what, testified before Congress that it would be a good thing to expand the children's health insurance program. That's who these people are. See, that's, and again, that's long before Trump. And she was literally, I think, window peeking. Because Republicans despise the idea that everybody should be able to go to the doctor when they, because what's the good in everybody being able to go to the doctor when they're sick? That means that the people who used to be able to go to the doctor when they're sick aren't special anymore. Because everything's a zero-sum game to a Republican. And long before Donald Trump was even a twinkle in the GOP's eye, well, Republicans were running around screaming at children for having the unmitigated temerity to want to have health insurance. And Jim says the reality is we all live in castles built on sand, and perhaps of sand. You know, when I was coming back from Philly, I had those two brief hours there where I saw the ocean and heard the cries of some seagulls for a few minutes. And lo and behold, the next morning before I left, I just went to go down to the beach one more time just to be there. And son of a gun, there was a whole bunch of sandcastle Jesus. I guess Christian sand crabs had crawled across the boardwalk in the night, and they'd sculpted a big old Jesus head right there by the boardwalk. And they sculpted another Jesus that said, "Behold, I'm coming soon." I was about a molecule, a neuron, a synapse away from scrounging through the garbage for a popsicle stick so I could just write in the sand, quick, hand him a tissue. Can't even go to the beach without getting proselytized in this country. Jesus. Subject line, Michelle Malkin, grifter. Stephen, New York, says, there is no way that Michelle Malkin, a person educated at Oberlin College, is actually a conservative. I suspect she's a Pinay, female from the Philippines. Rush Limbaugh, who realized there was a lot more money to be made on the right wing. Probably. Well, I've heard it said, I think it's Malloy who's told the story, that at one point in time, you know, Hannity said, I don't believe any of this shit. It's just that the money's so damn good. Yep. And so, you know, there's the first hour of the program and the filibobster. And probably a big downer of a filibobster. I apologize for that. But it's an interesting life we all get to lead. Randy in PA points out, Republicans only think that situations are zero-sum games when it doesn't involve money, power, and sex. Then it's a win-win, scratch my back if you scratch mine. Indeed. Irwin writes in, sorry about the situation. My family, some of whom are still in West Virginia, have several traits, one of which is bipolar. The other side of the family has other mental health problems. My sister's bipolar and is hard to get along with. I've seen psychiatrists since 1987. A good one's hard to find. And many are not going into the profession anymore. The good ones are hard to find and they're normally overworked. The mental health system varies from place to place, but generally is not that good. You will have nurse practitioners giving you medications in some cases. I've had one good one and one bad one. I've been fortunate to always have health insurance and now qualify for Medicare. I'm hoping it does not require the work requirements like the Republicans of Montana are wanting to do. Well, of course it would. Give a Republican a chance and they'll bring back the workhouses altogether. And what he said, and in a place like West Virginia, one of the problems is that the whatever we used to have for a mental health system got swamped in the opioid crisis. And the only thing they're the focus is always on opioids. And so if you've got something more exotic, I guess is the proper term, than that, well, you're kind of SOL. Jack in Shreveport says, Malkin, she was an anchor baby, and it was Glenn Beck that Malloy was talking about, I think. Now, I'm pretty sure it was Hannity. Pretty sure it was Hannity, Jack, because I've heard him tell the story in person. I know I'll be stepping on some toes, says James in Illinois. Williamson sounds like she has her finger on the pulse. Someone else who was really good at breaking down the problems of modern America. My brother swears by Chris Hedges' analysis of the problems that we all seem to agree upon. Here's the thing about Williamson and Hedges. They never talk about solutions. That's the hard part. And as soon as you go out that lamb offering an opinion, you risk being wrong. And I guess that's really important to some people, James. But I was always taught that very seldom do we as human beings learn from the things that we get right. And that almost always the real learning takes place from the things that we get wrong. I mean, I like to think that, you know, when it comes to we've talked about it here, the firearms and the murder and the death and the mass murders. You know, we've talked about possible solutions, and we sort of bang them around here and get consensus. Not that anybody's ever going to introduce any legislation or anything, but we sort of prove that people of goodwill, talking in goodwill and good faith to each other, can find their way toward solutions instead of just engaging in hand-wringing. Marianne Williamson got enough money and enough buzz to make the cut for the first couple of debates. So did Andrew Yang. So did a bunch of others. But there's no way that she would be capable, and not to say that she's not intelligent, she's not capable, she has no background in understanding how government works. And having had thus far, since January the 20th, 2017, some couple of years of amateur hour, I don't think we're at a place and time where we can afford to ever do that again. You need people who understand how government works and what government's role is and where government and how everyday ordinary American lives interface with the government that is supposed to be dedicated to, of, by, and for we, the people out there trying to build our more perfect union. Yeah, I know. Jim says, Hannity, Beck, what horrible excuses for humanity, much less anything else. I know. Flavio says, with Republicans, everything is a zero-sum game. They don't realize that there's an epidemic. They should help everybody has health care. They haven't read Poe's The Mask of the Red Death, where a vain Prince Prospero tries to wall himself off in the splendor of his palace and elite parties, and the plague finally catches up to him and his guests. You know, there's a lot of things they haven't read in the Republicans, and the things that they have read, they turn around and try to think and completely miss the point. We're living Dr. Strangelove right now because some Republican thought it was a fucking documentary. Yeah, well. So an hour in, we got $40 to finish off last night's challenge, and then 200 more to go to be even with the week. And right now, I can tell you it is of critical importance because I'm going to get eaten alive. This little family is going to get eaten alive in the month of August. Jesus. On top of everything that happens every month, now this. So let's run over and check in with Sparky over around the Extraordinary Ordinary round table in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves. Hey, Sparky, what's up?
Hey, Bob, sorry to hear about Ferg in your car.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. Thanks. I mean, you know him.
Yeah, at least he didn't suffer a major injury that would slowly kill him over the next 11 years of his life.
Yeah, no kidding. At least we hope not.
Well, I don't wish that on anybody.
No.
Haven't been through it.
I know what you've been through, and I know what you're referring to, and I know it. Yeah. God, what a hell.
Let me clue you in about Gilroy.
Okay.
It's not rural California. It's a bedroom community to San Jose, which is part of a megapolis that is the Bay Area.
Right.
I mean, It sits on Highway 101. As you drive south, and it goes, Highway 101 wraps its way through the hills south of San Jose by Hollister and then over the onto the coast and into Monterey.
Okay, and well, I mean, is there? It's a garlic. Are there garlic farms around there somewhere?
Yeah, they're right off the side of the freeway or the water.
So there is some farm country there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I worked down there for a week or so until I hurt my back back in 88 on a brand new hospital they were building. It was right out in the middle of an old garlic field. It was right off the freeway 101. I mean, whoever has it, Marcus, you got to turn your video off, man.
Yeah, I just typed that in there myself.
Distracting. Thank you.
Well, and it sucks up bandwidth. I mean, we know what bandwidth is like on this end.
And then I'm sorry for the people that try to jump in early and start the call. I mean, don't do that.
Yeah, see, I learned after last week, though. I learned, so I didn't answer.
I'll start eliminating people that I know could have done it until I find the right person and then tell everybody else to hang up.
The beatings will continue until morale improves.
Just so everybody knows, don't use the Skype link if you don't know how to use it until Bob goes to say, let's go to the hollow tree. But anyway, I just irked me when you said Gilroy was rural. I live in rural California compared to...
Yeah, and I was referring to the note that Terrace sent, and he wasn't speaking, I guess, directly about Gilroy, but he was talking about city dweller disdain among the tech, particularly among the tech industry, for those parts of California that really are, no kidding, rural.
Yeah, but I mean, Gilroy is just a hop, skip, and jump from San Jose. It ain't that far.
No, I've still got a very dear. I don't know.
And San Jose's grown to meet it, or has grown to meet it.
Well,
by
see,
now.
I've got a dear friend who lives in Sunnyvale and moved out there immediately after college. And at one point in time, that's who it was that sent me that braided rope of garlic. From the, you know, that I guess they picked up at the garlic festival or something.
Yeah, you probably pick it up at one of their booths. It's just like going to, when there's olive festivals out here, and then they have an orchard festival where you can get stuff that's grown here, local almonds, walnuts, that kind of thing. And then people have gardens, and we have our farmers market here in town. There's all kinds of things going on around areas where they grow shit. You know, towns get to be known for an event in their town. Like, we're known for the rodeo once a year here in the bull sale.
Right. I remember us talking about that.
But that's the way this works. I mean, true rural California. But we're slowly becoming unrural California.
Right, because
Walmart comes in and things start building up around, and then people move here from the city and they want to make it the city again. That's another problem. It's the way Reading became. Reading used to be a small city of local people, and then all the people from LA and the Bay Area moved up there, and they changed the whole way Reading is.
Well, yeah, that's kind of like what I was talking with Tracy last week about the LA that's described in those, you know, 1930s, 1940s, early 1950s Raymond Chandler novels. It's already huge, but there are places, for instance, in The Big Sleep. I tried to sort of correlate where he was talking about these, you know, sort of remote, rural-ish drives. And when I looked at where he was talking about on Google Earth, it's all sprawl. I mean, there's probably not. He talks about eucalyptus groves and things like that, and everything's got a house on it now. And of course,
we still have eucalyptus groves up here.
Oh yeah, no, I know. And I'd never seen one until that one trip I got to make to San Francisco. But the thing is, this is what happens when unrestrained growth takes place, unplanned, unconsidered, and you wind up with a hot mess. And yeah, a lot of this is part of the, well, you know, for instance, the way New York City became what it is largely a function of it being the point of entry for, you know, massive amounts of migration. For instance, the Lower East Side there, there's a tenement museum, and they talk about how, you know, waves of different ethnicities moved into those tenements and then until they could move on, whether it was Italians or Eastern European Jews or Irish. You know, if you've ever seen the gangs of New York, the Dead Rabbits, the Irish gang in that movie, that was just a stone's throw from the Lower East Side, where all that was taking place, you know, because the Bowery and Lower East Side, all that. And so that explains why New York is the way it is. And it fans out into, of course, Connecticut and New Jersey and like that. Same with Philadelphia. But in many ways, California is the child of the post-war permanent war footing economy boom, you know, a permanent war economy without having a permanent war. That didn't work out so well either. I remember as a kid watching. You remember My Three Sons? You know, Steve Douglas lived with his three boys in some Southern California suburb because he was an engineer at an aerospace plant.
Yeah, that's right.
And it just and those were the myths, the sort of origin myths that the rest of the country was sold in order to, encourage that. And then, you know, before that, and even before the Second World War, of course, you've got John Steinbeck writing The Grapes of Wrath, and you've got the Jodes loaded up in their truck and heading for California. And that book is just, you know, heartbreaking. And then a few years later, you get the Jodes recast in comic form in the Clampets. I don't know if anybody ever ponders that or if anybody's ever written like a PhD pop culture paper on it. But the Clampets are the comic form of the Jodes. And it's interesting because there's that generational thing that takes place. The Clampets are the comic form of the Jodes, just like the Stalag 13 in Hogan's Heroes is the horrors of Nazi Germany reduced to slapstick comedy. I mean, that's just kind of popping into my head right now, but I think it's kind of neat. Not neat, but certainly fascinating.
Yeah, and there's one you didn't say. There's the black migration of World War II.
Yeah, the out-migration from the South. And I think if I recall Tracy's story correctly, her family is part of that. And I remember Sandra talking about that years back, getting the hell out of Mississippi and Louisiana. Lady B talks about, you know, her family coming from Mississippi and going to civilization in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. Well, Richmond, California was built on the shipyards. And my dad worked there as a 22-year-old, 21, 22-year-old. No, wait a minute. The war started. He was 23. He was 23 years old when most of the migration started happening. Well, it built up a year before that. He was working in the shipyards as a welding instructor.
Was he working in the shipyards where they were building Henry Kaiser's Liberty ships?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because there were competitions between multiple shipyards to see who could turn out the largest number of Liberty ships the fastest.
He worked at Mare Island and Richmond. And you go to Mare Island, some of the old buildings from World War II that are still there.
Yeah, that's kind of that's like what blew my mind as I was driving back from Philly, stopping there in Elkton, Maryland, and seeing the great big forested green space where the munitions plant where my mother used to work had stood.
Well, I got to tour Mare Island thanks to a friend of mine from the Utapau group that lived there. When I went to the race in Sonoma in 2005 with my stepson, we got the grand tour in Mare Island.
That would be neat. Well, let's move around the room a little bit. I saw Marcus working with his video a little bit earlier, and Marcus, welcome to the conversation.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm alive.
I know how it goes.
No, sorry about the thing. It's just that I'm on the cell phone, so it doesn't. For some reason, it's automatically turning the video on.
Oh yeah, the Skype interface for cell phones is abysmal.
Sucks.
Yeah. Anything grabbing your attention this evening?
This evening, other than what you were saying earlier about your situation, not much other than the debates that look pretty sad.
Yeah, I think that seems. I guess it was. I had a note from I think Bill in Allentown, saying that Lawrence had finally. Lawrence O'Donnell had finally kind of come around to the position that we take here, that these are entertainments, that these don't generally advance the overall cause very much at all.
Yeah, I agree with that part. I think Biden did okay for what he had to deal with, but I don't think Kamala Harris or Cory Booker or anything like that were able to knock him down that much. If they did, that's only because people didn't understand what Biden was talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going. If Biden's the nominee, I'm going to vote for Biden. I just have I have extreme misgivings about whether that's the right tactic to take. Because I've seen polls with the Democratic nominee way the hell out in front of the Donald Trump before. I've been to that movie. I suspect we all have, and we know how it ended.
Yeah, I've seen that movie too. Kudos to Elton John.
All right, so we'll jump in if anything. If anything lights you up and you got a revelation to share, let's go check.
Okay, no problem.
Let's go check in with Steve from Georgistan. Hey, Steve, how you doing, brother?
Hey, Bob, I'm so sorry to hear about your situation, man. That's heartbreaking, bro.
I
hate to say this, it's so cliche, but it could be worse, you know.
Oh no, that was the first thing we thought, because the first thing out of our mouths was, is he okay?
And hopefully you had full coverage on your car, so at least you'll get something back, I don't know your situation.
I'm waiting to find that out.
Yeah. But I'm so sorry, brother, man. It's just heartbreaking, and I know how it is, but going on minimal sleep, man. You feel like a dingbat. I've been averaging about 2 hours sleep since Sunday every night, you know. So welcome to the no sleep club. It's a hoot, ain't it?
Oh, I feel like my eyeballs are bleeding right now. And let me say, not in a good way.
After food poisoning.
Yeah, you can't because you're up trotting to the bathroom every.
Oh, see, I remember that very well. But
good God, I got
it,
man!
I got it in Boston years and years and years ago. And I threw up everything but my toenails.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to, see an intestine come flying out. Jesus Christ, man.
But have you pretty much cleared it? You said you said Ms. Karen went and got you some buttermilk?
Yeah, she did. That was a good tip because that helped a whole lot. It really did. I mean, but what turned me around is I was vitamin D depleted, and I did a vitamin B injection that turned me around, and I finally got
a B12 shot will just perk you up, and I mean you're bushy tailed,
and it'll help you sleep too. I mean, there must be something. I'm not a doctor, and I don't pretend.
Yeah. Well, but I'm glad to know you're. Yeah, here we go with the connection things. But Steve, I'm glad to know you are feeling better because that's a little frog march through hell.
Oh, Bob, it's been a hell of a week, bro. I mean, last Sunday, Jesus, and I'm not gonna bleed either. But I'm just letting you know, you're not alone, brother. We found out we have an oak tree that's gonna hit the house. It's got to come down. That's thousands of dollars there. Then our community well went out
again.
13 houses. Yeah, the pump went this time. So you're talking, it was a major expense. And I'm the president of the subdivision, so I got to go around and try to corral money out of folks.
Yeah,
you know?
I was about to say, yeah, and you're the head of that, you're the head of your neighborhood association. So that means it falls to you. What did they call for volunteer? Did they call for a volunteer to step forward and everybody took one step back and you were standing there going, what?
Yeah, pretty much, man. And everybody's, I don't have any money. And what can you say to people when they tell you that? Because nobody has any money now, man. So last weekend cost me a pile. You're not alone, brother. You're not alone, man. If that makes you feel any better, I don't know if the misery likes company.
Well, no, that's why, that's why I went ahead and talked about it. Because,
and I'm so glad that you did, man. I'm very grateful.
When these things happen to people, we immediately, because modern America has done such a good job of isolating, the word nuclear family was the follow-up, the replacement for the previous living management system, which was known as the extended family.
Yeah, and that's
so,
why this
so the
this
nuclear
family
the
nu- so
the nuclear the nuclear family was created so that we could all be isolated and happy little consumers. But we're coming to a time when I don't know if it ever was sustainable, but we're coming to a time when it absolutely won't be sustainable. We're going to have to figure out community again if we're going to. I mean, your particular situation. The well's out. People say, well, I can't contribute the fund for the new pump. And you say, well, we'll just let it go and nobody will have water and we'll bring it all in
water.
In gallon jugs.
I had to dig into my 401k retirement. And I'm grateful it's there, but it's about depleted, man. I mean, it's a hell of a mess. It really is. Yeah, you got to have water. What the hell are you going to do, man?
Would it cost you a couple grand?
The whole replacement, Sparky, was about $4,000.
Jeez.
Because you're feeding 13 houses.
I'm lucky then.
My
pump
13
only
houses.
Costs $1,800, almost $1,900.
Right. Well, it's feeding 13 houses, and it's got to pump 100 gallons per minute to be adequate enough to adequately supply all the houses, But what are you going to do? What the hell are you going to do? You got to have water. And I'm no saint.
Well, I mean, we may live on dry land, but we are water-based animals.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're not alone, brother. You're not. And
I know that.
You know, I've kind of checked out of the whole political scene. It's just too much, man. I've been watching Woodstock, the 25th anniversary, and there is so much good music that never made the movie from, like, Canned Heat and CCR. I'm like, my God, why didn't they include this in the movie? Music's just a nasty business, you know?
Well, it is.
And one thing, then you can move on to somebody else. And I did watch a bit of the beauty pageant. Who was the guy that was promising everybody $1,000? Was that
Andrew? That's Andrew Yang. I will pay you. Isn't that just a little bit sort of wrong? I mean, it seems like rather of a tacit confession. I'll pay you $1,000 for your vote.
To vote for me? Yeah. It's not sustainable if you do the math. I mean, I would love it. I mean, I would love $10,000 a person.
You know, here in Southern West Virginia, it used to be, one vote equal to a pint of Four Roses.
Jesus Christ. And what are your take on that, Bob? Do you agree with me that it's not sustainable? Or
well, no, I think here's the thing: whether it's Medicare for all, free college, or universal basic income, this is the United States of America, and we can do pretty much anything that we set our minds to. You know, we've spent a century setting our minds to subsidies for coal and oil and gas, and they have and they have benefited magnificently from our taxpayer largesse.
Yeah, and I don't want to piss on Andrew Yang. If people like him, vote for him. Maybe he will be able to cut you a check. Hell, I'd be happy to get one.
But but what I'm getting at is, you know, we can do things for the people if we want to do things for the people. The problem is, the about half the country, the half that are, you know, conservatives, they would rather let people starve, die of preventable disease, fall through the cracks, and otherwise just goddamn go away, rather than think that they might pay one more penny in taxes. I mean, it's weird. I know what Elizabeth Warren's plan is. To a certain extent, I mean, I've read some of the policy papers on her website, and she's talking, you know, she's talking about that two penny tax on the very richest Americans. Dr. Bill O'Brien was talking about this other idea years and years and years ago, and to this day, it seems to make more sense than anything I've ever heard. And that is this: a simple penny transaction tax on every share traded on our stock markets. I mean, there.
Oh yeah,
that would
work.
Nothing is more. No single entity is more the beneficiary of the goodwill of the people of the United States than the godforsaken fucking stock markets. So,
and it would cut down on a lot of this fraud too. And I'm sorry to interrupt you, but you have these algorithms. Computers that trade just thousands of shares, you know, on penny stocks, it would cut down on a lot of that shit too.
Well, exactly.
Does that make any sense? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I trade away, and a penny, hell, a halfpenny, a mill, the millage rate, you know,
a half a penny. If you're a legitimate trader, you're going to laugh at that. But if you got, you know, a hedge fund owner that's trading millions of shares a day, you know, making, you know, 5 cents off of this or that, you're going to think twice. And it will put a stop to a lot of this fraud that's going on. And that's a good plan. That's smart.
Hey, guys.
Thinking. Yeah.
I think we used to have that. And the SEC, I think the funds went to the SEC, and they did away with it because the SEC piled up way too much money. So they out now just got rid of it, which is the stupidest thing we ever did.
Well, they could give it back to the people. Wouldn't you agree, bro? Yeah, that would be the way to do. Just,
absolutely.
Yeah. Jesus. But
What is the SEC?
Securities and Exchange Commission.
Securities and Exchange Commission.
Thought yeah. It was the SEC.
That is the SEC.
That's what I said.
That's what he said, oh, yeah.
I thought he said SSC.
Oh, no. Sorry if I wasn't clear.
Speaking of bandwidth, Bob, I wish I could share mine with you. I've got 300 megabytes per second now.
Now that you finally got it working?
Yeah, and I'm afraid I'm going to start growing tumors out of my neck. They're doing away with...
Jesus, Steve.
Well, shit, this is too much, man. They're doing away with...
Karen, I got a baby's arm growing out of my head.
They're doing away with cable. They're cutting off the hardline cable, and everything's going to come through the internet. So learning TV now is a whole new fucking learning curve, man. I got 400 channels of shit to choose from.
Well, if you live in civilization, call it that. I mean, when Bo and I were in D.C. in April for the reintroduction of the AIC Act, the Airbnb where we stayed had Frontier, I guess, Fios. TV. So all the TV came through the internet. That was great until you needed to be intensive with the internet and you wanted to watch Titanic for the 92nd time.
Right. And you see, I'm still experiencing buffering. You try to watch the news, you know, like local news buffers. You get that circle twirly thing.
Yeah.
Everybody's seen it. It's frustrating, man. And I've been bitching. They keep throwing more speed at me. I'm like, I don't want any more speed. Just keep my hardline cable connected like it used to be. But oh, no. And the funny thing is, Windstream's bankrupt. They're a penny stock now.
God.
So what a mess, man. But I'll let you circle on to other folks. I'm probably just blabbering on.
No, you're doing fine. You're doing fine.
Again, Bob, my heart goes out to you, brother. It really does. And I'm just so glad that Ferg is physically okay.
And it's scary business.
It is. Well, let's see what other folks got to say.
All right. Keeping it moving, who wants to jump in?
Hey, Bob, I just wanted to give my, you know, condolences and everything, and I feel horrible about your situation. And, you know, what's interesting is I have a cousin, and everybody's situation is different and unique, but it sounds very, very similar. And my other cousin has gone through hell and back to help, help her sister, and they did... They've really kept her afloat most of her adult life. And, she has mental deficiencies, I guess, for lack of a better word. But she has a hard time keeping a job, and she really has a hard time keeping track of things and taking care of herself. And they did get her on disability, you know, so she wasn't able to work or get any income for 2 years. So that was really tough on their whole that side of the family. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people in this situation, and it's again, you know,
oh, I know. If there's enough people out there, that Marianne Williamson is willing to try to make a buck off of them by hustling crystals. That's a significant. And I think you could probably say nationally is one of the most underserved communities. You know, the annual U.S. News and World Report hospital rankings just came out the other day, and well, lo and behold, the Mayo Clinic is number one for gastroenterology, and the Cleveland Clinic is number one for cardiac, and then there's number one for gynecological issues is like Brigham and Women's Hospital, maybe up in Boston. And every bodily function that has a medical specialty is on that list. And some, you know, cancer, number one for cancer is MD Anderson in Houston.
Rutgers in Chicago is probably up there for something.
Oh, the hospital at Northwestern University is way toward the top of the list on a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the issues that we're talking about and dealing with, it was like crickets.
Yeah, and it's crazy. I mean, body feeds the mind. The mind feeds the body. I mean, you can't have one without the other.
Well, let me interject a little levity here. I finally got some sleep last night. I got a phone call from Mom's Assisted Living Center. Her and her Assisted Living Center boyfriend had it in their heads that they were going to run off to their Assisted Living Center's boyfriend's beach house this weekend. And the thing is, he doesn't have a beach house.
But he's got one in his soul.
Because he did have one at one time, and they had to sell it so they could afford to keep him at the assisted living center.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they're like, look, we can't keep her here. Legally, she can leave if she wants. You need to do something with your mother.
Beautiful. Yeah, that's on you.
Yeah. So you got all this other crap being piled on.
So what are you supposed to do? Call her up and have her play a game of solitaire like it's the Manchurian candidate or something? Jesus.
Well, I had to call her and say, Mom, you can't go, but I'm sure the whole situation is passed by now. She lives in 10-minute increments, Bob. It's that bad. She had a meeting with the assisted living center director, and she was adamant, I'm leaving. I'm going to Chad's beach house. And Chad's always out wandering around looking for his car.
No, is she her boyfriend's a Chad?
Yeah, that's his name, Chad. And Chad's always wandering around looking for his car. Well, his car's not there. They sold it, too. Jesus Christ, man.
Because you gotta
laugh sometimes, man.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I remember oh so well the final years of my grandmother when the only way to keep her from going walkabout at 3 o'clock in the morning was to make sure she couldn't find her shoes, because one of the last things that remained of her sense of propriety was the fact that she would not be seen without her shoes and stockings. So as long as my mother tucked away her shoes and stockings somewhere, it was like kryptonite, because she would not go further than the front door.
That's so funny, Bob. Mom's her red lipstick. She won't go out of her room without her putting on her red lipstick, you know, just something she's probably been programmed to do ever since she was a teenager. So we just hide her red lipstick and her toothpicks. If anybody needs any toothpicks, just email me. I'll send them to you. I've got a carton full of toothpicks here. Every time I go visit her, I've got to confiscate them, you know?
Steve from Georgistan, toothpick poor.
Yeah. Christ, we could have a horn party. I'll supply the picnics.
You bring the toothpicks, I'll bring the cocktail weenies.
But you just got to laugh. You have to sometimes. Life is just, it's fucking crazy, man.
You know what, crazy. Steve, I'm worried about what you said about you're having to check out of the political, you know, arena for a little while. I think we all need a break.
Yep.
But
I have to, bro. It's just too much, man.
And think about it. We've got 17 months to go. And so we're already getting hammered and lethargic and tired of all this.
And I was actually, I'm glad y'all mentioned it, because I was going to bring it up. You know, you talk about, Steve, you got to get it. I do too. I mean, that's, you know.
I don't know how you do it, Bob. You need a break, bro.
The things that interest me, you know, I love getting on here and talking about my latest experiment with the griddle.
I love to hear it.
It's real. I experience, you know, real joy, real happiness, real peace when I'm just worried about not burning the goddamn toast, or you know, figuring out how to keep the bacon from becoming just too. I don't like snappy bacon. I like bacon to be a little, you know, a little chewful.
That's your escape hatch. Mine is music.
Yeah.
And everybody needs one, you know? Everybody needs one. Because you will drive yourself batshit crazy if you...
I don't know how you guys do it. Yeah,
what I was
getting at, based on what Christopher just brought up, is, you know, the Clavering rally last night. I mean, I guess it's a big win for America that nobody started chanting, "Send her back." They did, however... because Donald Trump has decided to run against Hillary Clinton some more, chant, "Lock her up, lock her up." But did you see him make the obscene gesture?
No, sir, I didn't watch it.
Well, I don't blame you, but, you know, the clips are out there. He preened around the stage for 4 minutes while a conniption took place. Out among the fire breathing, bloodthirsty denizens of maggot world, two people unfurled a banner there in Cincinnati in support of immigrants. One of them said, "Immigrants built America," and they grabbed his banner away and punched him in the head, or took a swing at him somehow.
Seriously, is there videos of that?
Oh, yeah. It's out there. I mean, I've got access to it, but it doesn't help much because it's just all you hear is the roaring maggots. And you know, he stands there and basks in the glow of all the hate and preens and does his Mussolini strut.
And
the point that I'm trying to make is that is where we are. Jesus, 6 months before the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary.
It's enough to make a hardcore alcoholic relapse.
They are
to make you relapse, man.
They are done to a tender turn. They are white, and I do mean white hot angry. And they're ready to go into the streets and do violence.
Oh, they're ready. I'm sure they are.
Did you see the maggots that they had to chase out of the Warren rally?
No.
No, Duncan. But tell us about that.
Oh, there's a video of this little group of maggots with, you know, that got the red hat and then a big banner like a flag, you know, wrapped around the gals. "I thought you guys were tolerant."
Oh, really?
And as they were escorting him out the door.
Well, and what I was getting at with Trump is that as these people were being assaulted in the audience, he eventually stood there and waved his hand and then made a gesture like he was masturbating at them.
Oh, wow.
Are you for real?
It's not a joke.
No, I'm not doubting your sincerity, but my God, man.
Hey, did anyone see that bug that they were talking about?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Lord. He's Donald Trump, Lord of the Flies now. I mean, for anybody who's watched American Gods, he reminded
me. Poor Piggy.
Yeah, he reminded me of Dead Wife because he's just this fly just starts walking around his forehead and eventually just crawls up into his hair.
You know, there's maggots in there. I mean, tell me this. So in the 2020 Republican convention, are they going to flip like they're going to turn in the elephant and the maggot's going to be the new emblem for the Republican Party?
It reminds me more than anything of, Pink Floyd's The Wall. You know, you're a music buff, Steve.
Yep.
The Worms.
Yep. Good
morning, Worm, you're on a... Yeah.
Are there any queers in the audience tonight?
You get them up against the wall.
The wall.
Against the wall.
Yeah.
There's one in the spotlight. He don't look right to me. Get him up against the wall.
That one's a faggot.
No, that one. That one looks Jewish, and that one's a coon. Who let all this riffraff into the room?
Into the room.
If I had my way, I'd have all of them shot. Yeah, man. How prophetic, man.
I wonder if us singing that's going to fuck up the YouTube file tonight. I wonder if we're going to get a DCM notice.
Oh, I hope not.
Did you hear about John Prideaux?
No, what?
He's in YouTube jail for live video. He can't do any live video for 3 months.
Why?
Because he used CNN feed for the debate the other night.
Oh, yeah. They busted David Pakman for that, too.
Yeah. Did they get Majority Report too?
I don't know. I've kind of wondered if maybe somehow or another if maybe Sam's paying for the rights to that or something.
Oh,
Sam's smart. If there's a workaround, he'll know it.
Everybody's going to that Twitch. Yep. Does anyone know about that Twitch?
Yeah, I've heard about that. In fact, a person close to our family. I mean, I know about it. I know that most of the people who make money at it, they make money on Twitch by having other people watch them play video games, which I can't wrap my head around because geezer. I think I could probably fire up Twitch and, you know, maybe watch paint dry. There's probably a market for that too.
I can get my Space Invaders Atari out, and somebody will pay me to play that. That's fine.
Man, what a great game.
Yeah.
Pong. Breakout or nothing. It was Pong first and then Breakout. God, I love Breakout.
Yeah. Breakout was cool, man, especially when you squeeze it in that little corner and the thing went crazy and started breaking out from the top down.
Yeah. Yeah, you get it through that gap, and it just sits there and does it. You're like, I am so cool. Yeah.
I worked in a beer and wine bar when I got out of the service, when they had a Pong table right in front of the bar, well, out a little way so people could walk to the bar, but I could see everything that was going on and who was playing the Pong table. And it was like, you know how you leave a quarter on the
for the table next game.
People were lining up their quarters to play.
Oh, see, I remember when you couldn't. You remember Defender by Williams?
Yeah, that was a great one too.
Man, you couldn't get near Defender, and I always hated those little extra special hateful mutated aliens that came in because you could never shoot the little bastards down, and they always got me.
You could hit them dead on and they would still come after you, you know. Somehow the machine would.
Centipede was like that too, with that fucking that jumping spider that would come.
Little bastard. He cost me so many quarters.
He wrecked many of my nights.
But what's really fun is when I explain to the next generation, once upon a time we had to put quarters in the machine. And then, what's a quarter? You had to put money in the machine?
Yeah, they had an arcade in the mall.
Yeah. Aladdin's Castle.
Well, I remember that.
Does anybody remember Mario Brothers, the first one that came out? There was an Easter egg in there where you could get 100 free men.
Well, I didn't know about that.
Well, that came after that came after Donkey Kong, though, right?
Yep. I can't remember where it was, but I had it mastered at one time. You had to kick this turtle back and forth. And as long as you kept kicking it, it would keep racking up free men, you know. And unless you got greedy, you had to stop at 99 or it would roll back to 1.
Ooh. Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah, that would suck.
Oh, man.
So,
it's
Bob, you
great.
Getting geared up for football season? How are the Volunteers going to do this year?
The Vols. The Mountaineers?
Or the Mountaineers.
Yes, sir.
Not the Volunteers, the Mountaineers.
I'm eagerly anticipating brand new coach. I'm not holding out a whole lot of hope. But if we acquit ourselves halfway decent, I'll be happy.
There you go. That's a good attitude to go in. Because your quarterback's in the NFL now, right?
Yeah, he wouldn't even
Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, he wouldn't even play in the bowl game.
I remember that. You were pissed off about that. I would be.
One of the things I'm most curious about is to see how, since he transferred from Alabama to Oklahoma, how that young man works out.
Right. What's his name again? I can't remember.
See, that's why I said that young man. Because
he lost the
Hurts,
right?
Yeah. Jamin Hurts. And
right.
If they can, if he goes out to Oklahoma and gets turned into a passing force, because God, he's got the legs. It'll be stunning, and Nick Satan will kick himself in the ass.
I don't know how my Irish are going to do this year. I don't know what the deal is with the Irish.
Well, the thing is, if they lose their first four games, they'll still be in the top 10. So that's the that's the beauty
of
being
pro football. I'm not following college football.
Yeah. Well, you're a Niners fan, right?
Yeah. I'm following them. We got Nick Bosa.
Yeah, you guys are going to be good this year. My uncle's a huge Niners fan. He lives in Noe Valley, and he said he's looking forward to this season.
There's high hopes for the Browns. Of course,
you're welcome for Nick Bosa.
Yeah.
Is that Steve?
Yeah, it's Steven. Yes. Steven.
Oh, Buckeye.
Yeah.
Yeah. I actually think we're going to have a pretty good year this year. The recruiting class was apparently, and I'm sorry to interrupt. I interrupted you guys.
No, jump right in. I was coming to you in a minute anyway.
Yeah. I was thinking about what you said earlier about being, like Steve said, being just tired of the news and being involved and being informed. And I've asked myself, what is it? Why does it seem like the Trumpanzees just never get tired? Why do they seem to have endless energy?
Because hate is a powerful motivating force, Steve. It's fuel.
I was just going to say that. That's what I was going to say. I think it's when you're fueled by hate.
Until every one of the libs is vanquished, they'll just keep going.
You know what? And here's what it is. It's even worse than that. It's, I don't care if I have to cut off all my limbs to get the libs. I won't have any libs. I can't run. I can't walk. I can't eat. But by God, they can't, whatever. I just, like I say, like you just said, Bob, It's just endless, boundless hatred.
And it's also coupled with mental deficiencies. Remember, these are also they're fueled entirely by hate, and at the same and it's not all hate because they're also fueled by idolatrous
fear.
Adoration of Trump. But these are people who set fire to $200 pairs of shoes that they've purchased to own the libs. Okay? These are people. You ever seen a Yeti cooler?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know who out there can afford a $750 cooler. But
not me.
But when Yeti said they weren't going to partner with the NRA anymore, the maggots went out and blew up their $700 coolers to own the libs. I mean, that's a Jesus Christ.
I mean, amazing.
And not even thinking about the practical end of it, that the company has this $750 and you're not going to get other people to stop buying. So that was nothing more than, you know, hateful, some sort of masturbatory 2 minutes hate for you to feel better.
Right.
Nothing.
But it empowered them.
I'm going to go out and buy a Moscow Mitch t-shirt.
Are they making those, Spartan?
Oh, yeah. You can get them on Amazon now.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's going to stick. And those billboards need to go up all over at least Kentucky.
They're in Kentucky now. There are Moscow Mitch billboards in Kentucky.
Fantastic.
And you know, it's funny. Remember the cocaine Mitch? Remember he said cocaine Mitch and he was fundraising off of that?
Yeah. And he embraced being called Darth Vader. But Moscow Mitch was a little too close to the truth.
That's exactly. I saw that and I'm like, that got it. That was a slice to the Achilles tendon that really seemed to get it.
You know, the issue won't go away because, for instance, you know, we find out that during the second night of the pageants this week, Nitwit Nero was on the phone with the boss. And I don't mean Bruce Springsteen. He was, the puppet was calling the puppeteer. He was on the phone with Putin, allegedly talking about the wildfires in Siberia. What are we supposed to believe that Julius Geezer picked up the phone and called Pooty and said, "Hey Pooty, I just wanted to check. You know, you really need to make sure you rake your forests up in Sabubia."
We need to do an airlift of like thousands and thousands of rakes in Siberia.
Yeah. Well, I just hope that in the fall and even into next year that the Democrats are smart enough to just pin that to him and start running ads about getting rid of Moscow Mitch. We need to get rid of Moscow Mitch and tar him with that.
We need ads pinning Trump to Duncan Hunter in the Southwest. We need ads pinning him to Epstein in the Southeast. We need ads pinning him to Roy Moore in the Deep South. We got to be smart about these ads.
I come back to my enduring theme for 2020, dare to dream. We got a lot of Republicans to replace in the Senate. We got it. This trend of Republicans bailing out in the House is very interesting to me.
I was just thinking that too, Bob. Somebody knows something. Somebody knows something inside that caucus.
Well, look at the Wall Street Journal story that came out today about it turns out that the SDNY has a shit ton more information about the porn star payoffs than anybody thought before. And they had
it. Was it the SDN? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, it's the SDNY. And they had the reason they were able to bust Michael Cohen so quick and so easy is because they had it all long before they even raided his place. Because Hope Hicks was singing and Keith Schiller, his former security chief, the guy that was alleged to have been banging melanoma, David Pecker, of course, sang like a canary. And so that's all just waiting. But if we do not get shed of him in November 2020, the statute of limitations will run on all that shit, even though there's a compelling argument that the statute should be told while he is enjoying presidential immunity. I wouldn't bet on that at all.
how ironic would it be for him to get reelected for the question of whether you can indict a sitting president would get to the Supreme Court, and beer loving Brett and Neil Gorsuch would say that there was nothing unconstitutional about it. Say, well, you could have indicted him and you didn't. Statutes of limitations have run out.
Well, I play out scenarios like that in my poor tormented mind all the time because, Steve, I just assume that people like Brat and Ann's boy Neil and Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Slappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and you know thousand old Balls and Strikes Roberts, they're gaming those things out too.
Oh yeah.
And by the way, we have passed the more than half.
119.
Yep. More than half of the Democratic majority in the House is now behind impeachment. This August recess may turn out to be critical. Well, because when they go home and face the voters and the voters say, fuck it, impeach him. We got your back. We'll be at the polls. You do your job.
Well, Brother Steve, it's always good to hear from you, my man.
Yeah, you too.
And I don't know if you're probably aware of this because you're very intelligent, but there is a hormone that's released in the brain. It's called oxytocin. And that's when people get together and hate. They get a high off of it. Are you familiar with that, Bob? Or?
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That's how Nazi Germany got started, in my never-to-be-humble opinion, you know? And that's how this Trump-Pansy thing keeps perpetuating.
Yeah. Bob, let me ask you something. After the Mueller report, I think I emailed you this or sent something. Chris Cillizza, who I think is dumber than a sack of doorknobs, wrote an article or some sort of silliness about how, oh, impeachment's dead. Oh, there's no impeachment. Ah, you know what? My phone went out and I never got to send it. And I got so sick of people. Well, you know, there was nothing new and there was no bombshells. And I thought to myself, yeah, you're right. He didn't stand up on his desk like you said, like on the desk like Yosemite Sam, you know, shooting his six shooters in the air and you know, didn't pull down his pants and moon the. I don't, you know, it's just I have no. I don't put, you know, I don't read op-eds. A friend of mine who sends it, I don't read them because I put no stock in anything that our supposed betters say about anything. Because Chris Cillizza was saying this, then some other dimwit wrote something that a friend of mine sent me saying, oh, impeachment is less likely now. And I lit into my friend, not really lit into my friend, but sort of. I said, what the hell value is a person writing something to say your opinion is it's less likely now? And the reason I said this is, and this is actually the math / science part of my brain saying, that's just complete blather because it's not testable. There's no way to know there's no way for that guy to say, I was right. It was more likely or less likely. And these pundits, they write what's to me the very definition of puff pieces. I mean,
what
does it mean to say it's less likely? What the fuck does that even mean?
Yeah, it means the check cleared again.
I was just going to say, I said, you know what? This guy had a contract. He had to write one op-ed a week, and that was the one he wrote.
But see, I mentioned at the top of the program, but Chris Cillizza recently went off on Kamala Harris. Oh, Tulsi Gabbard got under her skin. It's like reading a tip sheet for the WWE. But my favorite in the last couple of days is that just son of privilege David Brooks at the New York Times.
Oh.
Writing a column talking about the merits of Marianne Williamson. I mean, that was swirly straw right into the worst tequila I could find. It really, yeah, David. Oh my God.
Let me tell you something. I gotta
Marianne Williamson knows how to beat Trump. I mean, that was the headline.
I got a story nobody's talked about.
Yeah.
The congressional delegation trip to Ghana, most members of the Black Caucus, and Ilhan Omar and Nancy Pelosi. The pictures online. They went back to they call it the gate to slavery.
Yeah.
So I don't know if anybody's seen or heard about that, but you would think Trump would say something about that, or those maggots say, oh, they went back to Africa.
No. He's about 2 days behind the news cycle, Sparky. It took him a couple of days to get that tweet out today celebrating the fact that Elijah Cummings' home in Baltimore was broken into. I wouldn't be a nickel's worth of surprise to find out that some maggot operative was involved in it.
Well, I like the fact that Cummings just yelled and screamed or something, and the guy, whoever it was, left.
Hey, Sparky, Joe, I think Joe was trying to get in, because I just got a call, like, in the Skype call. And
I see Joe in the room.
He just joined.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
And since we've got one of those interludes going on and we don't have much program left, we got $40 to go to finish Bruce's Memorial Challenge. It was kindly carried over to this evening. We got $40 to finish that and $200 to stay even with the first 2 days of August. So we're at $240 to go to finish the week. We can't let challenges like that go and just slide away. Charlene jumped in on it, and Lady B jumped in on it, and that leaves 40 to go, and after that 200 more. So if there's any way, because this, like I said, this is going to be a shit show of a month. And just gotta keep up.
So did you say you're taking Monday off, Bob? I'm not quite there, man.
Oh, wait. Time out. Our buddy Glenn wiped out the challenge, so the challenge is met.
Okay.
And once again, I'm not getting notifications through my email for some reason. So that's wiped out, so we've only got $200 to go. And, yeah, that'll finish the first 2 days of August. Yeah, I've got one sibling and brother-in-law left from the little family I grew up in, and they live down in South Alabama, and they always try to come up before school starts, and my brother-in-law goes and gets fresh shrimp that are like right out of the Gulf down at Bayou La Batre.
Nice.
And brings them up and does, and his shrimp boil is better than anybody's shrimp boil I have ever been around.
Ever.
Yeah. Anywhere. And they take the grandbabies school shopping, and we just kind of hang out together once a year.
So he's from LA, lower Alabama?
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Yeah, they know how to cook it right. You enjoy yourself, man. Take a break. You need one.
Well, I'll be back. I'm filling in for Malloy on Tuesday evening, so
At the very least, I'll be back for that. But I should be back okay. for Tuesday evening's program as well.
But well, if you can't, we understand, you know. Jesus, we've all been getting hit left and right.
I rented a car today for a week so till I can sort out, you know, what's going on. And lo and behold, this time I didn't. I got a Ford Fusion, a hybrid. I got an Impala, and I got a Nissan Altima. I said, what, no Sentras? Because, you know, last time I was supposed to get an Impala to go to Philly, and I wound up, you know, resting my chin on my knees in a Sentra all the way up there. But, no, I've got a, there's a little Ford Fusion hybrid sitting out in the, and it's a little weird to get, I've never driven, I mean, I know about them, I've never driven one, and it's just kind of weird. You sit down, you push start, and nothing happens. You're like, is this thing on? And instead of a gear, instead of a shifter for the automatic transmission, you've got that little knob because it's like drive by wire. And you turn the knob until you onto R, and lo and behold, the thing is on. It's running on the battery until you get up and get going. It's just quiet. It makes no noise. And that Ford Fusion is pretty pleasurable to drive. You can feel sort of like a hitch when the gas engine takes over from the battery. You know what I mean? But overall, it's, it was a necessity for starters. And I'll have that until, I guess, next Thursday or something. And hopefully have something sorted out by then. Let me go back and just mention a note. Glenn said, I get it, Bob. Thank you for all y'all do. Sometimes seeing what happens to others really brings to light the rapid descent of our society. Truth. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you. And thanks to Jack in Shreveport. Took us down to only 150 to go to finish the week. Thank you very, very kindly indeed. So we're at 150. 150.
You're at 130, Bob. I'm gonna pitch in 20. And as far as FERC goes, some people are late bloomers. I didn't get my shit together until I was after 50 years old, man. So don't give up, man.
No one is. It's just so damn frightening.
So you just got your shit together a few years ago?
Yeah. I bounced around from job to job to job, and my brother finally came along, and he saved me, you know. He really did. Family, you just can't beat family. You can't.
Well, amen to that. And, you know, I think it was Gertrude Stein who said, friends are the family you pick for yourself. And that is certainly the case with this little community we've built here. I mean, this community saved people's lives, has averted disasters. The things that have happened in the course of these 15 years or so are absolutely stunning. Just stunning. So did Joe ever get like connected a show that he's connected?
I'm here.
Oh, there you are. Okay. Hey, Joe, what's up, man?
I don't know. I'm just kind of a solemn evening. I'm just sort of taking it all in.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Weren't you in a boxing match in that car?
Pardon?
That Sentra? Weren't you in some kind of boxing match?
I know this is leading to a joke, but what do you mean?
No, you said you got, when you drove all the way to Philly in that center, you got beat up like you were in a boxing match.
Oh, that's yeah, what. Yeah. I felt like, no, I got out of it and I felt like I'd been in a bar fight.
bar fight. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, much less civilized than a boxing match.
Hey, didn't what's the guy's name? Bennett in Colorado. Doesn't he remind you of Bill Murray? The way he talks and the way he looks. Couldn't you just see him?
I couldn't quite put my finger on what my ear was hearing, but that's very. Yeah, he's got that Carl the Assistant Greenskeeper voice going for him.
Right, right. I'm the underdog. I only have 2 points. I only have 2%. He's going to go all the way. He's going to be the president. I just
Here
know
he
it.
Is, the Cinderella story.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't think I can handle it, though, because the thing with Nitwit Nero is his voice, and Ferg and I sorted this out one evening. His voice is a cross between Bubbles from Trailer Park Boys and Carl the Assistant Greenskeeper. If you've ever seen Trailer Park Boys, the Canadian comedy.
Yeah. I was just
I don't know. I don't know. Let's just knock over a coin star.
Bubbles is smarter than Trump.
Oh, but by orders of magnitude, yeah. It was. What happened? I left him with Cat Food Mountain when he went to prison. Yeah. Hey, thank you to Jude and the Great Northwest. We're down to 125 to finish the week. Thank you, Jude. Thank you so much. So.
Yeah, and how come, you know, you don't let trolls on the call, Bob? How come John Delaney is allowed to troll the at the pageant there? He's allowed to troll the Democrats. What the hell is he doing?
He's a stalking horse. He's there are a couple of them that are in the race at the behest of somebody, and I mean this is pure paranoia on my part. At the behest of somebody or somebodies in the DNC who want to make sure that they can just chip away at the support for people like Bernie and Elizabeth Warren. And so that's there was no earthly reason for Jake Tapper to keep throwing it to John Delaney on the first night of the pageant. But there were marching orders involved. He had to have somebody. And you know, they spent so much time saying, come on, let's you and him fight, trying to turn it into a wrestling match. It was embarrassing. If I was Jake Tapper, I would be ashamed to show my face in front of a camera. Pretty much Dana Bash, too.
Well, at least Elizabeth Warren put old Delaney in his place. When she said, why would somebody run for president if they can't do what they promised or something like that.
Well, she said, why are you tearing us? Why did you run for president just to come here and tell us what we can't do?
Yeah.
Basically, it was just Delaney, you ignorant slut, shut up.
He got tag-teamed by Warren and Bernie.
Then he had that stupid, shit-eating grin on his face. That was hilarious. You knew he got smacked down.
And then Hickenlooper with his...
His fracking, the Hickenlooper. All his fracking money.
Throw your hands up and Bernie goes, yeah, that was the highlight of the debate.
Well, I was kind of... I kind of enjoyed I wrote the damn bill.
That was beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, we've got over on the stress line, we've got Nidia calling in from down in the Kanawha Valley. Hey, Nidia.
Hello, everyone, and let me first say that I am, you talked about old geezers, I'm definitely one of them, and I'm getting feedback, by the way, Bob, I don't know the rest who you are.
Let's see, you shouldn't be.
Okay, well, just want to make sure it's not annoying everybody else.
No, you're fine.
Okay, no. But I tried to call in on Skype. But I had no idea what I was doing. And Sparky, I have to tell you, you scared the living daylights out of me that I'm going to cause some terrible problem that's going to just drive everyone crazy. So that's why I finally gave up on that. I need a tutorial. But the reason for my call tonight, Bob, is the story you told about what happened to your son. I thought that some of the information I could share might not only help you, but listeners.
Please do.
Pence's centers are different than other mental health agencies because they were created by the Community Mental Health Centers Act signed by Kennedy back in 63, I think it was. So they have obligations that go above and beyond private mental health agencies. They get state money to serve people who do not have insurance. They also accept Medicaid. And this is not for me to say everything's rosy. I am acutely aware of the deficiencies in the system. I think we've talked before about some of the things I've witnessed in terms of addiction treatment. By the way, right now I'm working part-time in Clay County. You know Clay County, West Virginia.
And oh, my God.
Yeah, no grocery store in the whole county right now. But anyway, what I wanted to share with you is this. Number one, I don't understand why Ferg can't just apply for Medicaid on his own. He's an adult at this point. And with no or very little income, he should qualify. And as you know, you spoke to it eloquently the other night, West Virginia was one of the states with Medicaid expansion. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, even if he didn't have insurance, these comprehensive centers have to serve uninsured people. So, you know, I just wanted to make sure you were aware of those things, you know, when you're in the middle of something like
yeah,
that. Sometimes it's hard to sort it all out.
Are they in every county or?
Yes. So in your way back when, during that period of 63, Dr. Mildred Bateman, and if you're not familiar with who she was, you might want to look her up. She's just an amazing individual, African-American woman, one of the first, if she wasn't the first, director of mental health in the state. And she just passed away maybe, I don't know, I've lost track of time, 5-10 years ago. But they divided the state into 13 regions. And these, I work for one of these comprehensives, but in your area, it's FMRS, which stands for Fayette, Monroe, Raleigh, Summers, FMRS. And they have regional offices, so they have one in Beckley, and they have one in Fayette.
I was thinking and that would probably be it, yeah.
Right. They have to, by law, service your son. They have to. So that, and again, I don't mean to be Pollyanna here and say it's going to be great. Somebody said earlier they've had good therapists and lousy therapists, and that's absolutely true. It just, you know, it depends, and you got to find that right one and make sure there's a good connection, you know, and sometimes it works, and sometimes you gotta look around. But they would do an intake, and they'll do an assessment, and they should assign a therapist. They all have doctors. They may not be the greatest. Some of them are good. Some of them are not. But I would pursue that. And by the way, they all have crisis services. They have to. So are there a lot of problems in the system? Of course. In the old days, I'm sure all your listeners know, the tendency was to commit people and throw away the key. And there were terrible abuses with that. Now the tendency is to go the other way because the state facilities are overcrowded. So people go in there and they want to get them out quickly. And often they discharge them without sufficient support in the community. So no matter what, it is
that,
always a
yeah, struggle. That has been sort of our experience, that last part
mm-hmm.
that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have to be persistent with it. You got to find the right therapist. You got to find the right advocates. Every state, and this is something your listeners should know, every state by federal law must have a protection and advocacy agency. They are there to protect people from abuse and neglect by the system. And so there is one in West Virginia if you run into problems of that type. And then there's the state agency that oversees all of this, which in West Virginia is the Office of Behavioral Health and Health Facilities. So, again, not being Pollyanna by any means.
No, I don't think you are.
But there's a little more there than you may realize. This is what I do. You know, this is what I work with, a therapist right now in Clay. And you want to talk a place that is devoid of a lot of services. You know, I certainly see it all the time. And yet we limp along and we do the best we can.
You know,
so
I'm
optimistic that if he's motivated and you can get him in to go ahead and pursue it and, you know, encourage him to seek out therapists and physicians he's comfortable with, because again, there's a huge variance.
Oh yes, right. Oh yes, and okay. You know, you work if you work in Clay, and I don't want you to disclose any confidences or anything, media.
Uh-huh.
But you know, you mentioned that's an entire county.
Yep.
Without a grocery store in it.
That is correct. Yep.
And
I got to share with your folks, you know, they call that food deserts. Well, you might think this is weird for, and you know, I've worked with addictions before because we've talked about that, and then I transferred to Clay, and I'm not going to get into all that, but, and there are addiction issues out there too. But, you know, I ask people, this is just kind of, it's obviously not a scientific study, but I just want to share with your listeners. One of the first things I do, and you may find it strange a mental health therapist would do this, first thing I do when I see my clients is I say, have you eaten today? Have you exercised at all? How was your sleep? Because these give you a good indication of what's going on before you even get to what's your mood, what's going on, blah, blah, blah. And I will tell you, 9 times out of 10, people have not eaten, and if they did, it's absolute garbage. Now, because there's no healthy food there. Right?
Right, exactly.
The most I get is maybe I ate a Tudor's biscuit or I ate a Pop-Tart. And if you all believe that there's a mind-body connection and that good nutrition helps feed the brain, right, and helps clarify your thinking, that eating a lot of sugars does not do wonders for your mood, it's just absolutely amazing to me that some of those very basic issues like that are not being met, but that's what we're dealing with.
Well, exactly. And, you know, if we can talk and understand, because the science is there, you know, children who don't have good nutrition don't learn well. Adults with poor nutrition don't live well.
No, that's so it's pretty dire. But out where you are, I think hopefully a little bit better as far as that aspect goes, but I would pursue these, you know, getting services from these public agencies, and that goes for all your listeners. Take advantage of these services. Again, they're not perfect, but they're required by law to provide them, and there are an awful lot of people who are very dedicated and committed to this field who truly care and have a lot of empathy and a lot of skill. And then there's some people that are not very good. I mean, it's like anything else, right? Now, one other thing that you all referenced earlier, and I don't know how interesting it is to everybody, but you all were talking about Scientology, and I'm no fan of it either. But one of the reasons why a lot of people look at Scientology because in this field is because they have historically opposed electroconvulsive therapy.
Right. I know that.
And by the way, so do I. And that's still
wasn't L. Ron Hubbard subjected to it?
I don't know. Is that true? Is that where that's coming from? I don't know.
I think he, you know, I'm real sketchy on this, Nydia. But if I recall correctly, I think he was a veteran, like maybe a Second World War veteran.
Okay.
And he may have had some time in a military hospital after he separated, mm-hmm. or maybe before separation from service. And there's something back there that's tickling my memory that says that he had a bad time of it.
Well, that would make some sense, but I just got to share with you, you know, a lot of people, when I talk to them about this issue, they'll say, well, I don't do that anymore. And I'm like, yeah, they do. Actually, they do. In West Virginia, last time I checked, there were 14 hospitals doing it. And what they'll try to tell people is, oh, well, it's not like the old days, because we only run the current through one side of the brain, unipolar, instead of both sides of the brain. And we give you a sedative so you don't see the people, you know, the people who are in the, you know, the staff don't see you convulse. But the reality of it is that you are inducing a seizure in someone's brain, and it does impair memory and has a lot of other side effects. I'm sure some of you are aware. Ernest Hemingway said they saved, I think his quote was, they saved the patient but destroyed the man or something like that. He couldn't write afterwards.
Yeah.
There may be people who would strongly object to what I'm saying, but at least there should be some commonality. It should be the last resort where somebody is so depressed they can't get out of bed and it's life-threatening. But other than that,
I tend to think of it in the same breath as lobotomy and lobectomy.
Yeah, there you go.
It's
right.
it's too brutal to countenance. And the other thing that we have to bear in mind is that the very field itself is still arguably in its infancy.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And then, you know, this may come as a surprise to people. I don't know, but there is controversy about the use of a lot of psychotropic medications. If you look at the New Yorker magazine, maybe 2 months ago, did a big story about this young woman who was trying to get off all of her psychiatric medication and her journey through that. And it was very thought-provoking, and oh my God, it created this big firestorm. People were all upset. I'm not saying there's no place for those medications. However, I think people have to be really cautious and be very aware that, here again, you may not want to start right there. It might help get you through the really rough spots. But one of the things that we have learned, and this is scientifically based, is that walking and exercise is as effective as antidepressants. And not many people realize that.
Here, preach it.
So Bob, my main thing was, though, I wanted to make sure, you know, A, Ferg can go apply for Medicaid, and he's an adult. And with his income being what it is, he should qualify. That's number one. Number two, even if not, he can go to FMRS, and they have to serve him. Now, whether or not they do an adequate job is another matter, but you take one step at a time.
Sure, exactly. And the thing is that it's about the only alternative there is. And you're absolutely right, Nidia, when you say that when you're in the midst of something like this, it's hard to marshal clear thinking.
Absolutely. Right. All right. So I didn't want to monopolize the conversation. I was just really anxious to talk to you about this.
Well, I'm so glad you did.
At some point, but I do want you to know, finally, that Sparky has put the fear of God into me. And as a 66-year-old woman, I'm afraid to use Skype. So with that, I'm going to jump
off. Well, you know what? We will walk you through that. You'll be fine. Sparky is judicious with the lightsaber. I guarantee it. And, you know, it's only when things go sideways. If you want to use Skype, generally speaking, you know, if you get yourself a little headset with the mic and the headphones, you will not have any problem whatsoever. Most of the problem with Skype is the fact that somebody's job relies upon constantly screwing with the interface. So they just, you know, periodically they have to wreck it and everybody else has to pay the price for it.
Well, I'm just terrified now. But anyway, I'll jump off here.
Well, we will get you over that hump, Nidia. I promise.
We'll see. We'll see, Bob.
You take care. Bye now.
All right, bye-bye.
That was Nidia calling from down Charleston Way. She is a wellspring of information and a delight to chat with. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for the input and the help. Thank you. And thank you, everybody. Thank you, everybody.
You know, Bob,
this is going to be something that's going to be going on. For a while. Go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, I sort of interrupted. You know, you're talking about states that don't have the expansion: Alabama, Tennessee, Mississippi, Georgia, North and South Carolina, Florida. What do all those states have in common? They're all in the Southeast. They're all a bunch of Bible Belt dumbasses. And, you know, and right now, in Alabama, I believe it's hepatitis is running rampant to the point where people aren't even going out to eat at restaurants.
Well, it was running rampant in Kentucky, too, and it snuck into West Virginia. And we're going to see more and more of this simply because we don't, it's part and parcel of the same problem we have with the anti-vaxxers. There's a fundamental disconnect between people and the idea that we are not just because, you know, you've got generations now, the Republican Party preaching, oh, we're all rugged individuals who pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps, libertarian Ayn Rand paradise. That's just not true.
you know, they talk about lone wolf terrorists, and the, but the fact of the matter is, we're primates, okay? And if you get driven out of the troop, out of the community, you're going to die, okay? It is a death sentence to be exiled from the community. When the Romans wanted to get they were really pissed off at somebody, they would pass a law that declared that so-and-so was forbidden fire and water within X number of miles of Rome. And so that meant that I mean, nobody could provide you heat or water until you got to where it was you were exiled to. There is no rugged individualism. It's never happened. When the trappers and the mountain men and stuff went out in the West, they benefited from the largesse and the decency in large part of the indigenous peoples they ran across. None of the colonies that were started on the East Coast would have survived save for the decency of the indigenous population. The rugged
Native American.
And so when you take people and you tell them that they don't need a community, you are telling them it's like everything else Republican, Joe. It's founded on a godforsaken lie. It just is.
And these are the most of those states I mentioned that don't accept the Medicare expansion or Medicaid expansion are the taker states. They end up taking
but it's not just the Confederacy. I mean, the largest uninsured population in the United States is, of course, Texas. John Brittenboe tell you that in a heartbeat. But it's also Kansas. Right. It's also Missouri. It's also Idaho. I don't know if Utah did or not. Wyoming.
Right.
Montana, I think. Not sure about the Dakotas.
Yeah, I think the Dakotas did. Wyoming didn't. But, you know, just take Texas, and there you go. You know, they didn't accept the expansion. They've got more people that are uninsured, as you said. And now you've got people, you know, crossing the border who may have some kind of infectious disease or something. And before you know it, you could be in a real, you know, real dire straits.
Yeah, it could be a straight-up mess. Although I think what we're seeing more than anything, you know, we killed another person at the border. A little girl watched her father drop dead in one of our concentration camps not long back, within days ago. It's just
wait a minute. Now, according to Liz Cheney, they're not concentration camps.
Yeah, well, no. Liz Cheney can eat a bag of dicks. I'm sorry. She's the daughter of a bag of dicks.
Right.
she just got excoriated on social media because rather than remain silent and be thought a fool, she opened her mouth and removed all doubt. And for several days now, she's been defending her daddy and his invasion of the innocent people and slaughter of a million innocent people in Iraq. She tweeted, "No surprise commie Bernie Sanders, who honeymooned in Soviet Union, is okay with U.S. getting attacked first. On a side note, he seems to have daddy issues with my daddy." And she was promptly torn to shreds. Vote Vets said to her, "Your daddy helped lie America into a war where over 4,400 of our brothers and sisters died. He still's not even offered an apology. We all have issues with him." And it went on from there. Dave Zirin, one of the best sports writers in the country, said, "Red baiting, the last refuge of the Cheney." And then another person said, "Well, your daddy's a dick, figuratively and literally." and the other thing she did that, and you know, maybe we'll carry it over from Moran Monday, which we won't have, into Titanic Tuesday, if somebody reminds me. She's been pissing and moaning lately over a victory by a consortium of indigenous tribes to save and have the grizzly bear return to endangered species status in, like, Yellowstone National Park. And so she claimed, she cried, oh, she cried that Indians,
get this, and you know, this reinforces my atheism, because no lightning bolt came out of the sky and just went, you know, with Liz Cheney. And if there was a deity up there, there would have. She pissed and moaned that Native Americans have ruined white people's great Western way of life.
I don't know, but how can you be an atheist, though? Think about it. You know, because Dick Cheney is the Antichrist.
He may be, but I think that's a job position that's constantly being filled and refilled. Oh, and good news. Thank you to both Steve and Ms. Karen, Little Cletus and Little Twiggy. They took us down to 80, and Renee took us down to 70. Thank you, Renee, in D.C. Thank you very kindly. So $70 to go to stay even with the first 2 days of August, and about 14 minutes to do it in. So thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody who's jumped in. It's kind of critically important at this point in time. Is there anybody else in the conversation we haven't heard from this evening? Steve says he's got to get out of here. Steve from New York says he's got to get out of here. Steve, have a wonderful evening.
Just Mighty Mouse, and I don't think you're going to hear from him.
Okay. Has John Britovo been around this evening, or did you see him online?
No, I left a message with it on Discord. But...
Okay, cool.
Hey, Bob, where's Scotty? I haven't heard from Scotty in a while.
You mean Scott in San Diego?
Yeah,
he
just called in last night.
Yeah, he called in last night.
Okay, good.
Yeah, I think he's kind of been dealing with some of the same stuff that Steve from Georgistan was talking about. Every now and then you grind down and you got to take a step back.
Okay, good.
Okay, I need to. Brother Deacon Asa tells me the Skype group is clipping like mad, so. Some of that is just a matter of engineering on this end. If I turn away from the meter, well, not everybody has the same sound settings. So thanks, Skype. Yeah. Note coming in from Jude in the Great Northwest, subject line Liz Cheney. I'm careful what I voice out into the ether, yet somehow there is a prickly sense that one day she may seek the highest office. Shivers. And thank you for your kind thoughts, Jude. No, she's being groomed. She's being groomed to be a Republican female presidential candidate. In the event that we do oust Nitwit Nero in 20, you can almost guarantee that she will be a 2024 Republican presidential candidate. Maybe going head to head against Anchor Baby Ivanka. If we can get rid of him in 20.
Well, hey,
then Marsha Blackburn will probably jump in.
Marsha. Sure, Jan.
Hey, Bob, what's your thoughts on the whole situation with the director of intelligence that withdrew his nomination or whatever? What a kerfuffle that was.
Are you talking about Ratcliffe?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it just became obvious that it was interesting from a philosophical standpoint, because we found the limits of Republican senatorial tolerance. And I guess it John Ratcliffe was one of them. But then again, you know, he got proven to be a shameless four-square liar.
Yep.
A sycophant, right?
Stone cold busted. And the other part of it is, and this one isn't getting as much play, there's actually statutory authority for what you do when your DNI steps down. The deputy becomes acting automatically. No questions asked. There's nothing in there about how the president gets to go and find some lick spittle. And he says no. He's not going to name that person. That person's not going to be acting DNI. That he'll go and find some lick spittle.
And what, Ratcliffe claimed he prosecuted terrorists? Is that was the bullshit he put out?
Yeah, that among others, right. When he never had. He had only a tangential relationship to the Holy Land Foundation prosecution, and that wasn't even actually in his district.
Should we give a small clap to the Senate Republicans for actually?
No. Yeah, give them the clap. Give them the clap.
Yeah, the clap, not a clap. Yeah, right, exactly. That was well played, Joe. Well played. God, I've got a bunch of stuff. In the stack this evening, that, you know, just because of the way things shook out, we didn't quite get to. I really did want to get to the, and I'm glad we got to mention the Liz Cheney's jihad against the grizzly bears. But here's one that kind of had some "oh my God" written all over it. When it comes to video game voting machines, election systems and software, ES&S, they're a big one. They have confessed, and if you vote on an ES&S machine, this should bother you. If you vote on a machine at all, it should bother you.
Yeah, Diebold.
ES&S has admitted in a letter to Senator Ron Wyden, and, you know, Wyden comes from Oregon, and they sanely vote by mail. It's a lot harder to fuck that up. They admitted to Ron Wyden that they installed PC Anywhere, and that's a remote connection software, to a small number of customers between 2000 and 2006. And it was installed on these election management systems that ES&S sold to Motherboard Election Systems and Software.
That's like leaving your back door open and the screen door wide open.
The way it was described in the article, it's the worst decision for security short of leaving ballot boxes on a Moscow street corner.
I like that.
Paper ballots.
Yeah.
Counted by hand. We can do this. I mean, if we can...
Hey,
if we...
Do you know Greg Palast at all?
Yeah, I've met him and interviewed him on a few occasions.
You have interviewed him?
Oh, yeah.
Because I know it's very rare that you do have guests, but I think that would be one person that I think it would be extremely valuable to the community to hear him talk.
Probably so. I make certain assumptions here, and that is that most of these people are being heard on other programs.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't necessarily want to just rehash something that somebody may have heard earlier in the day or earlier in the week or yesterday or day before yesterday. Just for the sake of
you're such a gifted conversationalist and interviewer. You might draw out some more things out of him that others may not have.
Well, I think it's certainly worth talking about as we, and maybe at some point in time, getting him on the program as we draw nearer. And of course, the other expert, I mean, God, I've known him for as long as I've been doing this program, is Brad Friedman. I mean, Brad made himself an authority by virtue of hard work and study. And one of the first interviews I ever did, all the way back in the bad old days of terrestrial radio in Beckley, West Virginia, was to interview Brad.
And he told me, you know, and all the way back then, he was running around with his hair on fire because it had been definitively proven that every one of these video game voting devices, and we're talking about the same time frame as we're talking about in that story I just mentioned, they were all just hackable as hell. And I remember another anecdote. I went to vote. I had to vote early. And I went over to Fayetteville to the courthouse to vote. And at the time, I had a little Bluetooth earpiece with my phone. And I didn't think about it. I just walked through the door. And those people in there had a baby. You can't have that in here. That could be used to hack the election, the machines. I said, well, okay, that's not a problem. All you had to do was tell me. So, you know, I turned it off. I said, but did it ever occur to you that if you've got machines that are hackable by anything, that maybe the elections aren't that secure? You're not allowed to say that. Yeah, for real.
Even states of paper ballots like California have machines to count the ballots.
Yeah. And I think that's, to the extent that they are in any wise connectable to the internet or to any sort of electronic communications, they're vulnerable.
You know who should be hauled in front of a committee to answer for some of this shit is Michael Chertoff.
Yeah, whatever happened to that old criminal?
Man, he slunk away, took a whole shitload bundle of cash, and he was behind some of the ownership of that Diebold. I think, wasn't he? Was he on the board or something? After he left Homeland Security, he went, I think he sat on the board or he was part owner of Diebold, but he was definitely involved with all that and the rollout of all those goddamn machines.
Exactly.
At the airport?
Huh?
The porno screen.
It was the screening machines too, but I thought he also was involved with the Diebold. I maybe I'm wrong on that, but I thought he was.
No, I don't think you're wrong. I think there's an element of truth to that. Well, it's time to get out of here, and I have happy news. At the end of it all, Samson wiped out the remaining deficit, so we're good through the first 2 days of August in what is going to be an absolute bear of a month. But thanks everybody for great conversation this evening. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. We'll finish where we started. Just got a note from Lady B. I started it. I'm going to finish it. A woman gets on a bus with her baby. The bus driver takes one look and says, "Ugh, that's an ugly baby." Insulted, the woman marches to the back of the bus in a huff. She sits down and tells the man next to her, "The bus driver just insulted my baby." The man immediately replies, "You go up there and you tell that bus driver off. Go ahead, ma'am. I'll hold your monkey." It's okay if I laugh. I can't not laugh. Oh, everybody's got something to hide except me and my monkey. There's a second reference to that song in 2 days. I bet that hasn't happened on any other radio program in the United States or perhaps even the world. Oh, that's good. I needed a giggle on the way out the door. I think it's okay to giggle at that. Thank you, Lady B. Thanks for your wonderful words. And thanks to all of you. Thanks to all of you for participating however it is you choose so to do. Thank you to all of you who keep the program going. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you, Sparky, and the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable there in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves all these years. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Remember, no program Monday. Most likely back Tuesday. Have a great weekend, everybody. Later.